Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene with Will T and myself, Wole, and we are part of Empire Media at AmpireMedia.com. The homie Ray Jeezy is out. What's going on, Will T?
Nothing much, man. How you doing?
I'm good, man. The NBA playoffs are almost over. We have some, well, not over, almost over. The first round of the NBA playoffs is almost over.
The marathon that's known as the first round.
Yeah, it's been a dope first round, though, right?
Yeah, it is. But usually it goes, you know, because they try to get every game on TV. Mm-hmm. You know, that some games aren't played like every other day. But yeah, they've been doing a better job with putting it on TNT and NBA TV and ESPN.
Yeah, they've been a really, yeah, that's right. So, but yeah, my weekend was okay. My birthday.
Birthday. Past, yeah. What'd you do, man? Another year?
Another year.
Congratulations. Happy birthday.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much. It was good. Spent some quality time with the family. I got to see Super Mario Brothers with my nieces and my nephew. So I enjoyed myself. That movie is dope, man.
I went to go see it.
So it's great, right? Good. Real good, right?
Good movie.
Yeah, I feel like it's like movies like that typically don't stick to the theme, but it stuck to the theme of if you played Mario Brothers as a little kid. And
yeah,
I don't play newer Mario's, but I played the last the first four Mario Brothers, and it stuck to that whole thing.
Yeah, and then they incorporated like the Mario Kart into it, exactly. And also, so it was good, man. I actually, when I went, because I went the day it came out.
Oh, so you went fresh, okay.
Yeah, and there were a lot. I was surprised there was a lot of people in there.
A lot of adults.
I knew it would be.
Yeah, I knew it would be.
So I was glad to know that I wasn't the only adult that was in there trying to relive their childhood. I actually went with my son, so it was cool.
Yeah, you're dope. I wanted to make sure I used my nieces and my nephew as an excuse to go. Like, I was like, you know what? We're going on my birthday. I want to see this movie. I ain't going to be like the, I know there'll be a lot of kids. I ain't going to look like that person.
Yeah.
With a bunch of kids and adult there, that's kind of a bad look.
Did you go to your usual black chairs to
not really.
Celebrate?
No, I ain't go to black chairs. I went to see a band. I did it. I ended up at the end, but not like to celebrate because I was bored. I went to see a band perform with my boy. Familiar faces.
Gotcha. Where were they performing at?
Atlanta. And it wasn't like, I forgot that I'm not a big Familiar Faces fan. I forgot.
So you just standing there with your hands in your pocket, like chilling.
Because I remember I used to watch. I've been to a couple of their performances when they used to perform in the city, like 9th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I forgot. Like yeah, I remember. It took me back to my memories of why I didn't watch. I didn't see them perform. No knock. I'm not saying they bad.
Yeah, I understand.
It just ain't my cup of tea. It ain't my cup of tea.
Look,
so.
I get knocked all the time by people because I tell people I'm not a huge Go-Go fan.
Yeah.
I grew up here.
Yeah.
Been here the majority of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I like the vibe of going to a Go-Go
performance. Yes, it's the vibe more than anything, right?
The vibe, you know, like the energy there, mm-hmm. Partying, you know, a lot of people to go in there, it's like a celebration of life. But mm-hmm. for me to get in my car and listen to Go-Go music, it's just not my thing.
Yeah, just not. It wasn't my thing. I tried. I was like, yeah, I'm sorry. If that's your cup of tea, the crowd was interesting.
I bet it was. It's always an interesting crowd.
Yeah, from a good crowd, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
But shout out, man. Shout out to Familiar Faces, man. If you're listening, shout out to y'all. They're not listening.
Of course they are.
Hey, man, I mentioned Amp Papyri Media. Amp Papyri Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kime Report, hosted by ESPN Washington Commanders insider John Kime, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today insider Mike Jones. Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search The Urban Sports Scene. Also, make sure you subscribe to The Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well.
Make sure you subscribe to the Urban Sports.
I did that. I can do it.
No. This show can be found on Podcast DC, the local app with hundreds of options in local news and health in the DMV region. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Empire shows as well as other great content. Don't forget to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. Hit us up on IG at Urban Sports Scene and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates.
My man, Will T.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Here's what we have on tap. We'll talk about the Washington Commanders declining the fifth-year option on defensive end Chase Young, and we'll discuss the NFL draft. Then at 8:28, we'll talk about the NBA playoffs. At 8:40, we'll recap Javonte Tank Davis, K. Owen, Ryan Garcia. Finally, we'll play our HBCU Corner interview with former Morgan State men's basketball coach Todd Bozeman. You were around. You was there for Coach Bozeman, right? When you was at Morgan State. Wasn't he there when you were there?
I believe not.
Maybe not? Okay. No. I thought he was there for – I could be wrong. Okay.
I graduated in 2004.
Oh, I know. I thought he was there even around that time.
I think
I could be wrong, though. Yeah. I could be wrong. Ray would know. If Ray's not here, Ray would know. He would know better than
I. I'll do a fact check.
Yeah, do a fact check. All right, man. The Washington Wizards declined defensive end Chase Young's fifth-year option. Will T, your thoughts on their decision?
Interesting decision from the aspect of this. Mm-hmm. So there are two sides of it, right? The best ability is availability.
Yes.
And obviously, Chase Young has not been available. We know that he has sported, he's shown tons of potential. He was ranked coming into the draft probably the highest or one of the best DN prospects since Jadeveon Clowney, right? And if you look at their careers,
Chase probably had a better rookie year, but yeah, they're very similar. I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah. So... it's interesting to me that given that his lack of availability, but he has produced on a par level, right? Not from the expectation of where you drafted him at and from the hype, but he has produced somewhat reasonably. Would you say that as an observer and fan?
Yeah.
Right? But you put yourself behind the eight ball if you're Washington because you're gonna go against the same situation that you went against this offseason with Deron Payne.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly, yeah.
Deron Payne balled out, had a Pro Bowl season, and you had to pay him as what the second highest DN with regards to guaranteed money since Aaron Donald, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Will Washington be put in a similar situation with Chase Young? Because if he produces like people think that he can, you'll have to pay him, and you'll have to also say goodbye to Montez Sweat because that'll be too much money allocated along that defensive line.
Yeah, I've always said this: you can pay everybody if depending on who your rookie, if you're on a rookie quarterback deal, right? So, say Sam Howell pans out, you can still pay everybody. But my thing is about with Chase is, like, am I a fan of it? No. But do I understand it? Yes. I mean, like you said, Will, it's about being available. I'm a big believer in, like, he had a good rookie year, right? His rookie year was good. Like, he was defensive rookie of the year, right? A defensive rookie of the year.
Yep.
Second year, had a 1.5 sacks, and then he blew his knee out. You know, wasn't good. It was a sophomore slump. You reading Ray's text?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a sophomore slump. He had a bad. Well, he had to go. It is what it is. But he had a sophomore slump. But it wasn't a good second year. You know what I mean? I will not debate that. But he did get he did blow his knee out. And last season, he played like what, 4 or 5 games last season.
Which you didn't want him to play, and he got injured.
No, he played. No, excuse me. He just played 4 or 5 games. I mean, I didn't see anything out of it. But I will say this: coming off of that knee injury, I thought he looked pretty good for a dude coming off a knee injury for those 4 or 5 games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't expect him to sack everybody because I don't expect you after. And you've seen this in all sports because we've talked about this. Usually, the year you come back from an ACL, you're not yourself anyway. You're never yourself.
Usually the only takes you a year and a half.
Yeah, and the only person that has been abnormally, and I'm redundant by saying this, the only person that has done it And it's because he's a freak of nature. It's like Adrian Peterson.
Yep.
That's the only person. He's a freak of nature. But you've seen troubles with OBJ.
There's another guy who Terry Allen, former running back.
He's a blow his knee. Yeah, all the time. That's true. But you have, like, OBJ has struggled coming back from the injury. Multiple dudes have struggled coming back from this injury. So for anybody to ask, oh, man, they were disappointed from him last year, you'd be hating. You have an ulterior motive to just go on Chase Young from a performance of last season. So to me, it's this season. It's all about this season. To me, this season is where you will get the Chase Young and the future Chase Young. What I mean by that is there's nothing that, you know, this Chase Young is pretty much going to be the Chase Young you're going to get. You know what I'm saying? You can't use the excuse of injury. He is going to be what he is in terms of, does he have the explosion? Does he have the speed or whatnot? This Chase Young is going to be what he is. So I feel like the thing about it is if Chase Young balls out, like you said, like Will, you mentioned, like on the Deron Payne type of thing, if he balls out as a defensive end, that the money on that is going to be crazy, right? Where you could have had him for an extra year off of just the extension of the 5-year option. So you're taking a chance on that because you know the potential of him, you know the skill set. You just read off what scouts said about him before the draft, right?
Mm-hmm.
If he plays to his skill set and his level, say he has a season, has double digit sacks, has 15 sacks. You could have had him on a bargain on the 1 year, on that option year, and then worry about the contract later. Now, what's going to probably have to happen, you're going to have to franchise him after the season, just like Deron Payne, and then try to work out a deal. And then you still have to worry about Montez Sweat, to your point where you're like, you can't put all the money into Montez Sweat. You can because because the Niners did it because they had a cheaper quarterback. You can do it. You have to hope that Sam Howell pans out to be an adequate quarterback that you can pay your line and worry about other players. But then you still have to worry about Cam Curl, whose contract is coming up too. So, but my thing about this is that I'm not a fan of it, but I understand. I'm just not a big fan of it.
Okay, let me ask you this: what would have been the? And I understand that if he got injured, that his contract would have been guaranteed.
Yeah,
but what? What would have been the downside if, say, you extend a 5th-year option to him, right? Yeah. Midway through next season, he isn't playing to the level that you think he's accustomed to.
Yeah.
And then you start to say, hey, what is he worth out here on the open market?
I don't think there's anything wrong with that either. I feel like when you're talented like that, people are going to take a flyer on you anyway.
Exactly.
I agree. I just think there are always other options. Like, rather than you can just do this, I think you can play him and then have him see what he can do.
Mm-hmm.
And then if he's not playing well, someone's going to want to say, you may not be able to work with him, but we can.
Mm-hmm.
Ray, when he was texting in our, like, Commanders podcast group in terms of, like, the other podcast, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ray texted this. He said, Ray said, shoot, we'll take him to Atlanta. So I'm saying that's just a fan talking about.
You're right. So not just fans, but I'm pretty sure that NFL personnel, guys who are working in NFL teams personnel department are saying, look at this guy's tape in college.
Yes.
Look at the athleticism.
Exactly.
Look at the talent.
Same.
They'll make every excuse. He wasn't coached up right.
Yeah.
Washington doesn't necessarily have the best PT staff or physical training.
Or they don't coach to a skill set.
Or they didn't put him in a scheme that plays to a skill set.
Exactly.
You know, some teams might say, oh, we can use him as a 3-4 stand up pass rusher.
Mm-hmm. So it's a lot to me. I feel like, to your point, Will, I think there's more into it than just saying that another team won't take him. So we put this out there on Twitter. My man Ben Chappelle said, this is about cap control, in my opinion. I think they plan to tag him and immediately give him a deal next offseason. Maybe. I mean, I don't know. But, again, it's hard to say because it's going to be new ownership.
Yeah, but there's that. Mm-hmm. And then I believe, what is it, like DNs outside, you know, they get paid. I don't think there's a classification for DN / pass rusher.
Mm.
Or, you know, for in the in the hierarchy for franchising guys. No, but I don't understand it from the aspect of this guy's one of the more talented guys, and then that amount of money you're going to pay along your D-line.
Yeah, exactly. My man Taj Wilson said, my beef is this. They picked up Sweat's fifth-year option, only to not extend him 16 to 20 mil, so now both ends are up. Curl is in a walk year, and rumor is he is looking for about 18 to 20 a year. These radio guys talking reckless, trade him for a six-round pick is weird. Poor management.
What do you say? Trade him for a six-round pick.
He said these radio dudes are talking, say, poor trade. He's just saying, like, that's what they're saying.
No, I don't think you trade him for a six-round pick.
He's saying that he doesn't agree with it. He's just saying poor man. He says this is poor management.
Oh, if you don't see him being in your long-term future, then you trade him.
Yeah.
But obviously, Ron Rivera, potential, I don't know. No one knows what they're doing there. You also don't know what the, and you mentioned it, you alluded to it. You also don't know what role that potential change in ownership is going
to
play.
Yeah, you just don't. My man, trying to think, read one more. Here you go. On Twitter, it's actually, I think he's in response to, but pretty much the same thing. My man, King of DC Sports says his value once the report came out is a six round pick at this point. Honestly think the Commanders have washed their hands beyond 2023 for Chase. Unless he balls out, this is the price you pay when you draft another DN after trading up to get one the year before. I mean, this is the thing. People have a revisionist history. I mean, in terms of memory, I mean, like, this is what it is. Chase was one of the highly touted prospects coming out.
He was can't miss.
Can't miss. So, and he did produce his rookie year. So I think we all act as if, like, he was never successful here.
Mm-hmm.
He produced his rookie year. He didn't have a great second year. That's happened to many Hall of Fame players, right? Like, their rookie year, they ball out. We call it the sophomore slump, right? Yep. Third year, you get it. You figure it out, and then you gain momentum. You gain consistency. But he got hurt his second year. That's the problem, is he got hurt his second year. Chase, this is my whole thing is that to say that Chase is done or that type of narrative needs to stop. I think Washington, I think Ron Rivera is smart enough to know because he's done it with DeRon Payne. DeRon Payne wasn't producing, like, into the level they thought he was. You know, to me, he was getting better, but he wasn't producing at the level they wanted him to produce. He finally got motivated. You could say money motivated him, whatever. And it's not a good look or a bad look, whatever you want to call it. But money motivated him, and you saw the level of what DeRon Payne could do last season. Chase is in a similar situation. The difference between Chase and DeRon Payne, you can argue, make the argument to say that Chase showed you some dominance his rookie year, so you know what's in there. Now I have to motivate you to get you out of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, some people thrive that way. That's how certain people are motivated. It's not a good thing or bad. I don't think it's the greatest thing in the world, to be honest with you, but that's how some people are. If Chase balls out, which I expect him to do, if he's healthy, you'll be fine. Because my thing is that when you have Jonathan Allen playing the level he's playing right now, DeRon Payne playing at the level he is, yes, you still have Montez Sweat. Chase doesn't have to do but so much to be dominant anyway. But, you know, with those guys playing the way they're playing, if he is any level of what he was his rookie year, Chase can dominate playing that style of ball and give you good numbers because the other three have gotten better anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see. We don't know how it's going to play out. If you're a Washington fan such as yourself, you will hope that he turns in a season for the ages, 12 and a half sacks, maybe upwards to 15 sacks.
Well, I just root for the person. I mean, I'm missing your fan. I just root for the person because he's local. I don't like the narrative. I know what people are trying to do, and I don't like the narrative. It's like you're trying to trash your own. And it's like people are getting it from certain people that we're not a part of, like the radio stations that want to trash this kid. And like, I don't like the narrative. I think it's disgusting because that dude doesn't like them and he don't talk to them. And then they go extra negative on him because they don't like him and because he doesn't want to talk to them. So then everybody listens to those stations and now they feel like, oh, he's a bust. Oh, he ain't nothing. He can't do this. He can't do that. So they fall in fray with the narrative. And in all honesty, he gave you his rookie years, helped you get even on a BS team that got you to the postseason, scoring 7-9. He's one of the main reasons you got to the postseason is because of a Chase Young. He got hurt his second year, third year. Now we're like, oh, he's a bust. He's a bust. He gave you a rookie. He was rookie of the year his first year. He got hurt his second year, but now he's all of a sudden he's a bust.
No, I don't think he's a bust. Only in Washington, man. I don't think he's a bust. I just think he hasn't been available, and he
wants
given the opportunity to show everyone what he can do on the field. He's going to dazzle people, and people are going to be right back on his.
You know what?
Know what? Yeah, pause. No homo.
Hey, man, on Facebook, man, Cornelius Galt said, terrible decision in my opinion. The potential upside is too high. Picking up the option on a former rookie of the year coming off a major injury makes perfect sense because he's shown the work ethic and leadership that you need. He's a safe gamble, but they're being dumb as usual. LOL. However, I'm listening to Obama on 980 break down how terrible he actually played against great offensive tackles, and he's making some good points. See what I'm talking about? You saw talking about the radio? See what I'm talking about? Man. It's they something, man.
I mean,
because you can depict a lot of, you can make a lot of people look bad if you want to break them down. Not look bad, but you can pick on some people's negativities.
Yeah, everyone has negative tape.
Yes, and
you can always use that
to
Advocate from your perspective if you are not a fan of his.
I agree, man. Totally agree. All right, the NFL draft starts Thursday night. The Commanders have the 16th pick of the draft. Will, you aren't a Washington fan, so from your perspective, man.
I'm not a fan. I'm not a guy who watches the draft, who keeps up with the pre-draft ratings. But I'll tell you this. If you're asking me specifically
about their position, like what position think they need? Not the player, but their
cornerback.
Corner, okay.
I would say cornerback. Okay. Corner, or if there is an elite left tackle available.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he doesn't even have to be elite, right? A guy you could think that you can plug in for 10 years,
may
not be a pro bowler,
okay. But
he plays at a very consistent and above average level.
Okay.
Those are the two areas that they should address.
I think left tackle is the position they should address. So I am kind of agreeing with you. I think depending on if, this is my opinion, if the cornerback, I kind of agree with what you say. If the cornerback that's remaining, she's job. Good move, boy. If the cornerback is better than tackle remaining, it's better than I'm taking the cornerback, and vice versa. Like I'm not, because I can get it. Like because I can, the quality of tackles, to your point, that's going to be out there in 16. You could probably get in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but the cornerback that's supposed to be probably mid, you know, close to top 10, top 15, slips to your, you know, to 16. You to 16. Yeah, like Joey Porter, son. Yeah, okay. I would get him.
Let me ask you this: are you one of those people that's going to watch the draft? And
I'm gonna probably play some ball.
Play some ball.
Yeah. Oh, I don't care about live.
You don't?
No, okay. I'm not that person.
Remember the year we all went to a certain establishment? We watched the draft.
It wasn't a strip club, was it?
No.
No, I know we used to. Yeah. Which one? We watched.
We were
a couple
doing
of,
the show. Yeah, we were.
Oh,
the show
what the you first you're talking about? What was it? Oh, back in Ann Arbor. Was that in? We did it. What's the name? We did a show. We did at that establishment, right?
No, we just got together and watched the draft, and then we made comments about it. I'm just saying, man, life's changed. I'm just showing. I'm
telling, I know. I'm trying to figure where that was. That wasn't back in when we got the big sliders. I was addicted to the sliders.
Yes.
Okay, exactly. Yeah. All right. I just wanted to make sure. It was that kind of. We just stuffed it up. Well, I can say we did something Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yes.
It wasn't Buffalo Wild Wings.
It was.
Okay, I'm talking about. Okay, it's totally. When I said the sliders, it wasn't Buffalo Wild Wings.
Okay. Well.
I'm not gonna call it in Hanover, Anne Arundel side.
Oh, got you.
You got it now? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, things have changed, bro. Yeah, man.
but you know what, man?
Fancy football stuff too.
Yeah, but you know what, man? I'm surprised. I'm not gonna say surprised, but a lot of people I talk to, they are really excited to watch the first round of the NFL draft.
I don't like that whole setup thing, so I'm different. I don't care. I don't like that it's split up like that, so I don't even get into all that.
I mean, look, I will not lie to you. When I was younger, I would sit.
And watch the whole draft?
not the whole draft, but I would watch it.
I used to watch the first round, but then I got to the point where like, what is me watching going to do for me?
Exactly, and that's what I'm getting to. And that's what I was trying to get to. Yeah. Like the NFL has people brainwashed into thinking that this is must-see TV. Yeah, well, all they're doing is calling someone's name, and in between you have.
That's cute, Buck. What is that doing? What is that doing for us?
It doesn't do
it's
anything.
It's not like
for
a sporting event. It's a draft. Like you're calling the name. You're just walking up the stage. You're good, bro.
Yeah, like
you'll live.
Tomorrow is crazy because the NBA playoffs have been great.
Yes.
And the first round.
You think the draft's gonna take over the ratings?
Yes, I absolutely do.
No, that'd be tough if it does.
And I don't know. What games are on tomorrow.
There's some bad games. I think they stacked today because they're gonna be now you make sense. You know why? Because today's games are stacked.
Yes.
It makes sense. Because they got Golden State and the Lakers tonight.
Yes.
So that I thought Golden State would play tomorrow. Not tomorrow. I thought the Lakers would play tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, why are the Lakers playing so quick? And then now it makes sense to me. Because they don't want them to compete with the NFL.
That
draft. Makes sense.
Crazy. It's crazy.
That makes sense
because
now.
Because I think tomorrow we'll probably get Bucks Heat.
Yeah, because it's. Which is a good series, though.
It's a surprising series.
See, it's a surprisingly good series.
I don't think there's anyone who really thought
Atlanta,
that.
Will we get Atlanta-Boston?
And I think we may get Atlanta-Boston tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken.
Would they give us two with the draft?
I would hope they would. Listen, I plan on watching.
You know what? You got me with that one. I ain't going to hold you. You got me with that one. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so we got four. So you got four games tonight?
Yeah.
And then tomorrow, I'm trying to bring up the schedule for the NBA. We only get one game.
I knew
Celtics,
it.
Hawks.
I knew we was going to get one.
At 8:30 on TNT.
You're right, because your point is right. Because they're not going to waste the Bucks. The Bucks Heat.
Well, yeah, the Bucks is Heat tonight. It's tonight at 9:30.
That's the Bucks Heat tonight?
Yeah, 9:30.
I knew they stacking it, bruh. They did this on purpose.
Yeah, man, it's crazy, man.
Because they know they think Boston Heat, even though Atlanta won, they think that series is over. That's why. That's why they did it. They're gonna sacrifice that one.
Yeah.
They're not gonna sacrifice Giannis and Butler. They're not gonna do that. That's tough, bruh.
So people will sit and watch.
Tough. That is tough.
And they will watch names being called for 2 hours.
Bruh, over watching the NBA playoffs.
It's crazy. I'm just interested to see what
Will just dropped he just dropped the bomb on this thing, man.
Interested to see what the ratings would be.
It's going wow.
So, we can talk about that next week.
We definitely can. Oh, that is amazing because you're right. Oh, what's this?
That's the Flash.
Right? Yeah, they ruined it if he kept the same people, everything would have been dope. Superman and everything. Hate James Gunn, man. Messed up. You know, they're not keeping this Flash dude either.
Yeah.
They're not keeping
Ezra Miller.
Yeah, they're not keeping him. I know he's been a lot of stuff, though.
Yeah, he's been a lot going on with him.
I know, cancel culture. Hey, but also I would like to say that from Washington, tackle Paris Johnson, too, man. That's a good one. But we're going straight to the next topic. We're going to go to break because we went over. But we good, though. We're still doing good. We talked about NBA playoffs. So we might as well go right into it, right?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, NBA playoffs, man. So this playoffs, we talked about how lit it's been. The NBA playoffs, how lit it's been. But at the same time, it's been wild. I mean, you got recently, and I think he's going to play, though, Sacramento Kings guard De'Aaron Fox suffered a fractured finger on his left hand. He was doubtful for a minute, but I know he said yesterday, said he was going to play. I think I got an ESPN alert that said
he's
plans to play.
Yeah.
He'll be available. Yep. He'll be available for tonight. The series and the game five is 2-2 against the Warriors.
Back in Sacramento.
Back in Sacramento, though. So this is a big game. This is like the swing game right here. And it was competitive in game four. So this is the game they definitely need. You don't want to go down 3-2 going back to
against the defending champion.
So, but for you, like, that's just one. But there have been so many injuries in this playoffs. Like, how concerned has that been for you? Like, that you got Kawhi was out, missed the entire playoffs. He had a meniscus torn. Yeah. That was reported today. Giannis was out with
Paul
George. Hero missing for the
Tyler Hero
for the Heat. So many. Just so many.
Well, some of these have been freak accidents or instances. But what's curious to me is, we're in the age of load management during the regular season, right? So I take care of my body. I reduce the number of steps. I reduce the amount of torque that I'm putting on my lower body to stay ready for this the first round, the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas everyone's locked in. You know your opponent's weaknesses. You know the game plan. And all you have to do is just go out there and execute, and the best team should win.
Yeah.
Right? All of these injuries, like I said, some of them are freak injuries, but it really makes you question if this load management thing is really working. And I'll tell you this, because let's just be honest, like, you need to get your body accustomed, warmed up to playing, like, when the playoffs start, to playing every other day, right?
Yeah.
You're not playing back-to-back. Mm-hmm. Some guys, they don't play back-to-back, or they don't play every other game. Yeah. They'll take two games off for the sake of load management. So it's really making me start the question if long-term, you know, load management thing will be not an excuse, but will be a reason that guys can use to take games off when they aren't injured.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It just got reported that Julius Randle is out today because he got hurt.
Yeah, because of his ankle.
Yeah, he got hurt. Yeah, hurt against his ankle in this game, right?
He was hurt in the last game.
So okay, so he was out. He came out of the game. He played a little bit. He came out.
Yeah.
I agree. I feel like if you played games, I mean, in the '80s, this wasn't like a problem. Or in the '90s, it wasn't a problem.
It wasn't. I mean, I do understand that the players are bigger, faster, stronger, and they've been playing at a higher level for longer because a lot of these guys play high school and AAU basketball, and they've been playing AAU since they were like 10 years old, right? So I understand that, and I respect that. But like I said, just makes you question, is the load management thing, will it be a trend that continues when you start to see a lot of these guys being injured as we start to play every other day in the playoffs?
True. I totally agree. I agree with you. All right, so let's go into it. Like, we mentioned some of the series. I mentioned your New York Knicks series, which I feel like it's an exciting series, but I feel like it's a little bit of an underappreciated series. But for you, Will T, what has been the most underappreciated series in this year's first round of the NBA playoffs for you?
Underappreciated.
So far? Yeah. Would it be?
Well, you mentioned the Knicks.
Knicks and Cavs.
One series that, because Giannis has been injured, I don't think people, especially game four, right, was the Heat versus the Bucks.
Yes.
Right, Jimmy Butler's performance in Game Four was a performance for the ages.
All right, I got something to talk about that though.
All right, talk about it.
All right, I have an issue with, like, I think Jimmy Butler is a dog, so it's not a knock on him, but I do feel like he gets more calls than your favorite top five player, and I don't know why, because he gets a lot of calls that you get the benefit of the doubt calls that your favorite player, who is in the top five. I'm taking my favorite player out of it. I'm talking about, you can name any top five player. He was getting more calls than Giannis. And Giannis is, to a lot of people, the best player in the league.
Okay.
And Giannis is aggressive, and just as aggressive.
Do you think that he possibly gets a favorable call because of, how can I put this? He doesn't bitch as much to the referees.
Well, he bitches, but not as much. I'll tell you, Giannis don't bitch. Luka bitches, yeah.
Yes.
Luka bitches, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, LeBron bitches.
Yes.
Giannis don't bitch. Giannis will run you over and be like, and could be in the wrong, but he'll just run back. But they all, like, to me, Jimmy just plays, I agree. But he has his own little complaints.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like,
or could it be maybe that the referees just appreciate his approach to the game and maybe his personality?
It's a possibility. I just know my years of watching basketball, your best player has always, the best player in the league or the best player on the court has always gotten calls. I've seen that, like, Jordan. Like, he, all right, did Jordan bitch?
Yeah. I mean, well, I wouldn't say he bitched. I would say that
he got a lot of calls, right?
He expressed, yeah, he got a lot of calls, and he
Jimmy
would definitely
get Jordan calls. That's all I'm saying. I'm not even knocking. Like, Jimmy, look, Jordan ain't even my favorite. Jimmy get Jordan calls. And Jimmy, I'm just saying, you can understand Jordan. I can understand it.
Jimmy's a star player, man.
Jimmy get Jordan calls.
These he's are a different. Star player.
Didn't say he's a star player. Listen to me. Like I said, your top five. Like, who your top five?
Top five players in the NBA
yes,
now.
Yes, who your top five?
Giannis is my favorite.
Oh, okay.
Giannis
okay.
is number one.
That's fair. Okay.
Number two, I would see people aren't going to like this. Kawhi.
That's fine.
Number three, Embiid.
That's fine.
Number four, LeBron.
That's fine.
Number five.
Oh, KD.
KD.
All right. He gets more calls than all of them. Maybe other than Embiid. In the playoffs. Not in the regular season. I'm not talking regular season. Because I watch, again, we can go to the bubble. Look at the bubble stats. Look at him in the bubble in the finals.
Mm-hmm.
Look how many times he went to the free throw line. Jimmy.
Well, Jimmy uses that pump fake, man.
Jimmy, y'all keep saying, like, look, Jimmy don't get touched sometimes. Jimmy get more calls. I'm going to say this again. Jimmy get more calls than your favorite player in the top five. Jimmy get more calls than all of them. Again, Jimmy, look, I'm going to say, look, I'm going to use this caveat. Jimmy be balling.
Yeah.
I'm just saying he be balling. I'm just telling you that Jimmy get more calls than your favorite, than your top five best player, the best players. That's in the playoffs. And I'm just trying to figure it out. All I want to do is figure it out. I want to know why Jimmy get the benefit of the doubt. Like, John Morant has been complaining about every freaking time he hits the floor. And I just said, it's the playoffs. John, why are you complaining? It's the playoffs. He gets, but if that's Jimmy though, Jimmy getting them calls. I just don't get it. I just don't understand. I want somebody to explain it. Put on a tape of a Ja game and a Jimmy game. Jimmy hits you with a pump fake. He'll throw his body into you. This is what Jimmy do. He'll pump. Everybody watches and sees the same thing. Pump fake and throw his body into you and get the call. Steph will do the, dog, I'm watching the Warriors game. I'm rooting for the Kings. Steph do the same thing. Pump fake. Throw his body into him. Steph don't get the call. That's Steph Curry though. He should get the call. That's Steph.
Well, maybe.
He's a champion.
Yes. Yes, he's one of the best players in the NBA.
That's all I'm saying, man.
Maybe it's they. I don't know. This is one thing I do
but
know.
You acknowledge he gets calls, though, right?
He gets calls. Yeah. But I will say this one thing about Jimmy. Uh-huh. Jimmy doesn't flail a lot like some players, in my opinion.
I won't say flail, but what he does is that my issue with Jimmy is when he throws his body into you.
Yes, he throws. So if he gets you up and he throws his body into you,
but they do this, they do the verticality thing, and he gets away with it. So when you do go vertical and he still throws his body, they still call. They call it nowadays. They don't call it anymore. That's what I'm saying. Like, but Jimmy get them calls, like the vertical. Like you watch how many games? You watch so many games where people jump straight up and they complain about the foul, but they say, "Oh, it's the verticality rule." But Jimmy, that don't count for Jimmy. That don't count for Jimmy. But hey, man, I ain't knocking. He still got it.
Yeah, Jimmy's still hustle, man. I ain't knocking. Look, Jimmy, man, I think I one of the Jimmy. Things that Pat Riley and the Heat front office may regret somewhat is not increasing the level of talent. While Jimmy Butler has been able to, this run that he's been on since he's been with the Heat,
they have.
I'll say
it's
this.
It's hard, man.
Like, it is. Because I'll say this. Like Bam has shown the potential to be a defensive player of the year and be a consistent high level all star. But he hasn't taken that step to be a superstar.
Fit the Miami way.
And yeah, I mean it's a culture thing.
Everybody don't fit.
It's a culture thing.
They got like Tyler Hero, cool. Like he good. Everybody don't fit. And then if you like what kind of talent do you want? Like would you want somebody to play second fiddle to Jimmy? Or because Jimmy the guy. Like are you trying to say you need a star player that's better than Jimmy?
No, I'm not saying you need a star player. What I'm saying is, all right. Clearly, Jimmy Butler has shown that he can take this team to the finals.
Yes, he can.
He came within one shot last year of taking this team to the finals in game seven against Boston.
I'm fair with that. Yeah, I'm fair with
right?
that.
Right. So you look at it, you say,
they're definitely good enough.
Let's pair Jimmy Butler with a star player. Another star player. There's got to be a guy. I'll take it this far. If you don't surround him with a star player, let's improve the talent along this roster, such as the way that the Clippers did, right?
Okay, all right.
Where you improve the talent along that roster from 1 through 12. Because you think of the Clippers, 1 through 12,
They're deep.
All those guys can get can reasonably get in and contribute to the team.
Facts.
To a win. Mm-hmm. I just don't think the Miami Heat have done that. Why he's been on this run. I think they've tried with Kyle Lowry, but he's been injured.
You got Victor, Kyle. Victor got just blew his
but Vic, yeah, Victor Oladipo wasn't the
same Vic. I mean, I don't know. My thing is they played that style. I don't know if they would win. It would change because Bo has always had a certain type of makeup of his squad. You know what I mean? Like even from the Pat, if you're going from the Pat Riley tree, right?
Right.
They're not constructed that way. Like they play. It's like their way. I don't know how to explain it.
No, I get it. It's a heat culture. Yeah. You have to have a mentality. Yeah, like, you have to buy into it.
Similar to the Patriots.
But I'll tell you this. I don't know why we're talking so much about the Heat.
It's cool. It's cool. We're talking. We're rapping.
When you think about it, the way they've constructed that roster and they've been able to produce starter level talent from undrafted guys.
Great, man.
And I look at this team here in Washington and I'm just like, yo, why can't they
Washington do the same thing?
Adopt that mentality.
I'm serious. It's a culture.
Yeah, it's nothing to see them trade away a first round pick and still bring in a guy off the street and develop him to being a starter.
Yeah, it's a culture. It's coming from, but you need to build that culture. And we're gonna jump off this topic anyway from the Heat. We can probably go somewhere else, but it comes from the top, right? And it comes from Pat Riley at the top because he's part of. I mean, he's not the owner, but he's the president. So it comes from him, and he's also coach, right? So
it comes part ownership.
It's part ownership, but he's like,
yes,
you know what I mean? Like, who's their owner? It's
Mickey Arison. Mickey
Arison, thank you. So it's Pat who's coached this team, and he's pretty much been Miami since he left New York, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's Pat, then who was under Pat? Spo, you know what I mean? Everything. So it's basically Pat's organization mentally, right? And then you got a guy that's been under you that's speaking his language that you got to do a certain thing when you work out. You got to have a certain type of body fat. You got to do this. You got to do that. This is a culture that he's built. It's cultivated. The Wizards, they're not going to have that type of situation. You know what I mean? It's going to be hard because you don't have a guy who's was your coach, is now your president. Like, doesn't have that type of – not everybody's Pat Riley. Put it that way. Not everyone's Pat Riley.
And you know what's crazy? Before we jump off this topic and we go to boxing, there goes the blue ring of death.
I told you.
The buffer.
Yeah, it's the TV.
you know what was crazy? You know, when Tommy Shepard was fired, I heard the same two names. For president,
if he's actually
Masai Ujiri and now. Tim Connelly,
He's rumored again.
Yeah, it's crazy why
they mention
why are these the only two guys that are consistently getting?
Ujiri. If you want Ujiri,
not true African.
Go ahead, dog. You want Ujiri. I feel like, well, if you get Ujiri, you may have to fire. I mean, I like what's Unsell Jr., but because Nurse is on the market too, so it probably have to be a tandem, in my opinion. If he's getting fired, if Nurse being fired wasn't because of Ujiri, then you can get both. You can try to get both, but. I mean, I don't know if you're getting Ujiri. I just don't. I think that thing is. I don't know why he would leave Toronto to come to Washington.
I don't know why you would either.
I mean, I don't know why.
What you've built up there.
I don't know.
Like it's a far more passionate fan base
in Toronto,
yes, than you will ever have in DC.
Oh my God, it's by far. This is not even a real fan base. I don't care what anybody tells me. Anybody's been to a Wizards game. Sorry if I'm saying this. I've covered. It's not a real fan.
No, don't get me wrong, right? Like, if this was a team that was playing into the second round of the playoffs, like, we saw what it was when you had Wall. Gilbert and when you had Wall and you had
it's
Bill,
about,
right?
Obviously, it's about
it's a, Bill, it was electric.
When we had Wall as leaders, yes. Bill,
Wall, I mean.
But Wall and Bill together, yes.
Yes, Wall and Bill. But it was John Wall's team.
Yes.
If we're going to go with a top dog.
Like Gil, like,
you had the Gilbert Arenas era, and then you had the John Wall era. Yeah. And this was a team that people thought could get at least to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yes, everybody did.
It was electric.
Yes.
Downtown was electric.
Yeah, man. That was different, man. I mean, I remember I was at the game where John Wall hit the three against Boston and jumped on the table and was like, this is my city, after in game six. Ain't that three to take him to game seven? Yeah. Like, nah, man. Like, and Gil, we all know, man, Gil brought basketball back to the city. Like, absolutely. For real. Like, those eras of Wizards basketball in our lifetime. We haven't seen it, and it was something. That's something special, man. I ain't gonna lie. And it had nothing to do about winning championships or nothing. It was just the excitement of those teams.
And the excitement of those players.
Those players are different levels, man. Yep. They're on different levels. And arguably, in their era, yes, definitely top five guards in either era. Like Gil at that time. We forget how good Gil was at that time. Top five guard. John Wall, top five guard, when healthy, what he was doing. So, yeah, totally agree, man. Totally agree. All right, man, let's go into boxing. Will mentioned it. Kind of just thought this fight would be a little bit better, but it is what it is. Saturday night, we finally got the matchup between Ryan Garcia and Javante Tank Davis. Tank KO Garcia in the seventh round with a body shot. Bow!
Shot right to the liver, man. Yeah.
The first knockdown was mean, though. I thought that was better than this body shot, but that's just a whole different thing.
Well, the body, if you watched it in real time, the body shot, you thought that Ryan Garcia would be able to. You didn't think much of it.
Yeah, and it's true.
But when they slowed it down, they showed it hit him right in the liver. Yeah. You knew that he wasn't coming back.
I'm surprised.
I thought that Ryan Garcia was going to try to buy time by. Holding.
Yeah, he was trying.
But he just couldn't.
He was trying, though. He was trying. I saw when he hit him, I was like, ooh, it hurt. The way he responded, I was like, oh, yeah, I could tell. Like, how he's, I was like, is he going to go, what is he trying to do? And then he went down the knee. I was like, oh, yeah, he got him.
Okay, but one thing that I really haven't heard people discuss was the scoring.
The
scoring of the second round. Because if you looked at the three judges' scorecard, one of the judges, I believe, had it 10-10.
Yeah, stupid. But a knockdown, right? That was a knockdown, right?
And it was a knockdown, right? Typically, yeah. So what he was saying was that, exactly. I don't understand that. So
even if he won, it would be a 10-9. It would have to be 10-9. It can't be 10-10 with a knockdown.
And it would have to, only way it would be 10 Not in my opinion, 10-9 is if Ryan Garcia dominated the round, which he didn't.
No, I agree. I totally agree. I'm just saying, like, I didn't even pay attention to the cards. I was like, oh, he just.
No, I always like to pay attention to the cards.
No, I think somebody sent me a text. I just didn't look at it. Mm-hmm. But that's just that was some Vegas stuff.
A couple of things, just a couple of observations from last Saturday night. It was the night that boxing needed. Right, yeah. That energy, that level of excitement for it.
It's horrible undercard.
Terrible undercard. second observation, that damn fight cost too much for me to pay, man.
I feel you, dog.
Shut up. Pirate.
I was there, though.
I went?
Yeah, he was there. Actually, I couldn't win. He had tickets, and I just didn't feel like going to Vegas. I'm not going to lie. I'm just not a big Vegas person.
Oh, okay.
But I was like, he's an evil dude. He's putting all over social media. My brother abandoned me. I got tickets for him and everything. Look, and took pictures of the tickets.
That's wild.
He's a bad brother. You know how that dude is. He's just on a different level. But go ahead, bro.
Third observation. The catch weight, right? So, yes, this fight lived up to its expectations from the gate and from the pay-per-view buys and also from the action in the ring, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people thought that Tank would win by a knockout.
Yeah.
But to me, when we say that Tank Davis is the face of boxing,
I
do not agree with that because if you are going to be the face of boxing, and you want to be, you are proving yourself to be the best of the best.
Yeah.
If you want to fight a guy, Ryan Garcia was at 140,
fight him fair.
Fight him at 140, and then you make the case for yourself for being the face of boxing.
I guess I want to add that. I guess that's the question I did want to ask you. Then, do you think that the 140, does it put an asterisk on this a little bit? Him fighting him at 136 compared to 140? Because I didn't really, for me, I'm all about seeing the two fighters fight. But then, but what I do like about Ryan Garcia is they didn't never use that as an excuse.
And
that's why, I had a lot of respect for him after the fight. Like, he was like, I lost to the better dude. And that's what it was. It wasn't.
Look, the better fight under the conditions.
The better fighter won.
The better fighter won, right? There are a couple things I didn't like. Okay. I didn't like the 136 catch weight, even though I understand why you do it. If you, Gervonta Tank Davis, I'm the A side.
Yeah.
So if you want to fight me, I'm the moneymaker.
Yeah.
You're going to meet all of my demands, right? Gotcha. So you're going to stack the odds against yourself to put yourself in a better position to win, right?
Mayweather's
but, down. Yes, but that's when we think of the sport of boxing, right? When we think of the guys who are truly legendary, even though he's in his post-career, he hasn't, I'll be blunt, he's made an ass out of himself, Oscar De La Hoya.
Yeah.
Oscar De La Hoya fought
everyone
in his era.
Sure did,
right?
Man.
He was the A side. He didn't make guys.
He didn't make guys have to change up all. He did
anything.
Man.
He said, "You want to fight me, Bernard Hopkins?
Yeah, man.
I'm gonna go to 160. I'm gonna fight Bernard Hopkins.
You ain't lying, bro. You ain't
right?
lying."
Right. So when I think of when we think of even Floyd Mayweather, he went to 154 to fight Canelo.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Was at 147. He did have some fights when he fought Marquez when he was coming back off of his retirement.
Yeah.
He did make Marquez meet him at a catch weight, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Canelo? No. Floyd versus Marquez in 2009. If I remember correctly.
Floyd always makes you go. The same with Floyd makes you go through hoops all the time. New Floyd makes you go through hoops.
Money Mayweather made you jump through hoops.
Pretty boy Floyd was about that war.
He would fight anyone.
Anywhere. Don't even matter who you don't matter.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
But when you Gervonta Tank Davis and you say I'm the face of boxing, in my opinion, you're not. You might be one of the bigger attractions in boxing, but are you the face of boxing? No. Yeah. There's still only one guy who's the base of boxing, and that's Canelo.
Canelo's face of boxing.
Canelo went to 175, lost at 175. Yeah. He went back down to 168 he did make Triple G come up to 168, but Triple G had been off for some time, and Triple G had a fight before they fought at 168.
So
now he said, and you know, after this fight on Cinco de Mayo, he said in Mexican Independence Day in September, I'm going to go back at it again, and I'm going to fight him at 175.
Who fight Triple G?
No, not Triple G. What's the guy?
Benavidez?
Not Benavidez. The guy who lost to.
Oh, Bivol.
Bivol.
Yeah,
he says he wants to fight Bivol at 175.
Right.
And I think what will happen, what we'll see is even if he loses, the fans will still adore him because he didn't make Bivol.
Yeah.
Cut weight to come meet him at 168.
I don't think anybody could ever, what you won't do, and what folks won't do, is to doubt Canelo's gangster in terms of willing to fight whoever. He does it more than any of your favorite boxers. I'm going to be real. Like, you can say this, that he don't fight American boxers. You can say all you want, but he don't dodge smoke. Like, in terms of all your favorite boxers, whoever. And I love Earl. People love Khabib, people love Tank, you love whoever. Your dudes don't sign the contracts quick. They make sure everything is on their side. Everything favors their side. Canelo, more than anybody, will concede more than anybody to say, you know what? Nah, we can fight. Let's just do it.
Yep.
More than anybody. So I'm with you. But he can't be the face of boxing, to your point, though, Will. I feel like, and also your resume still ain't warranted enough for you to be the face of boxing.
No, he hasn't fought the best at the best fighters at 135 or 140.
To
be the face of boxing. He still needs, you know.
Your best fighter is Ryan Garcia. That's the best you've seen.
Yep.
And I mean, and you did good work. Nobody, I'm not knocking you. I'm just highly impressed. I think to me, all of his doubters, if you were a doubter, he's erased that. Because even with the knockdown, even without the knockouts, he was dominating the fight.
Because he fought him at 136.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I'm just saying that in this fight, with the conditions. With the conditions. After the knockdown, he dominated the fight. After the first one. Because after that, Garcia even said it, and you saw it, though. He gave him too much respect because he felt the power. So then it was like, all right, I ain't trying to get touched like that again. You know what I mean? Because you saw round one, he was going at him. He wasn't even – Ryan Garcia was going at Tank. And he was giving him no room. His quickness was getting there. Tank was trying to hold. He was holding for most of that first round. You saw he was holding for most of the first round. And even for second round, he was holding. Like, when Ryan was trying to get his shots off. But then when he got caught, then Ryan was timid. You know what I mean? Like, he was timid. And from that on, that point on, to your point about the scorecards or whatever – Ryan wasn't winning rounds for real because he wasn't throwing. He was more cautious about what to throw. But I feel like for Tank, to give him credit, like, because I haven't given him a lot of credit in the past. Yeah, this to me, he showed that he's there. I don't think he's him because I still think Shakur beats him, to be honest with you.
I think Devin Haney and Shakur beat him.
Man, I don't think Haney's lack of power scares me. But yeah, he's got more skill. I don't know if Haney. I think if Haney get touched, but Haney's chin has shown that he can get wobbled, and Tank can get him. I think Tank can get him, but we'll see though. I mean, again, I think skilled boxers will give Tank problems, like thorough problems. I'd be really interested to see what he can do with Lomachenko though. I'd be really interested with that one. But again, like, but to your point, Will, like, he can't be the face. Your resume ain't there yet. And I'm with you, like, the whole Ryan Garcia at 136 does rub me the wrong way. It does rub me the wrong way. Because and also, to a certain extent, you've seen the pre-fight stuff, right? They were on ESPN and how Tank was, even Tank said, like, you can't eat. Ha, ha, ha. Like, you can't eat, how are you going to have the stamina? I'm like, bro, you're even saying it. You're saying, you already know, like, he can't make weight because it's not his natural weight. You're even saying this. Yeah. So it's like you knew he was at a disadvantage.
Yep.
It's wild. It is wild.
I mean, but people will follow the hype.
Yes,
people
of course.
Will follow because Tank Davis is a
he's pop culture now.
Pop culture. He's a galvanizing figure. People will follow the hype, and whenever he fights, people will come out in droves and they will support those fights.
Yeah, that's true, man. Like, so what do you think for you? Who do you think Tank fights next? I mean, he's probably somebody in jail, but still.
We don't. We don't know. We don't know. We don't know what's going to
happen. 777775.
No, we don't know. We don't know what's going to happen with his.
This case. No, I'm messing with you.
Look, man. I know the fight won't be made because it is top rank.
Yeah.
But I would love to see him fight the winner of Lomachenko versus Devin Haney.
That's a race that the rumors about that is going to happen. Race that that's the word about that is going to happen.
I don't think that's going to happen. I would love to see him fight the winner of Lomachenko Devin Haney.
Me too.
And that fight we'll get that fight in May.
What about this one? Because it's controversial. Got some lot of people thought he might have lost the fight. What about Cruz? Folks thought people think that Tank actually lost that fight.
Well, here's the thing. If he fights Leo Santa Cruz.
No, not Cruz. Not Leo. Isak Cruz.
Isak Cruz. Too much time has passed since they last fought each other. Right? If he was going to make that fight. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. If you want to make yourself the face of boxing,
you take that.
That was the fight that you say, okay.
Let's run it back. I'm gonna race, which I think. Yeah. Yeah. Because a lot of people thought you lost.
The proverbial
champs.
The king of kings, or the pound. You know, the alleged pound for pound. They say, okay, y'all think I lost?
Yeah.
Let's run it back.
I mean, let's keep it a buck. You mentioned Canelo losing to Bivol. Truth be told, I'm going to keep this 110. Canelo got to fight Bivol again. He don't got to.
He doesn't have to,
In terms of where he at, if he don't want to, don't got to. There's other money fights to make folks forget about Bivol.
But he said that
Like you said, the mentality of a champ. He wants to erase that.
Yep.
Like, he wants to erase that L. So, to your point, like, if Tank want to – erase a thought of an L or whatever, because I mean, you know, opinion's opinion. Like, when people believe, like, if you believe that Tank lost that fight, usually when you're a champ and you're a competitor, you'd be like, nah, I ain't lose this fight. I'm gonna show y'all. I'm gonna get this rematch. I'm gonna beat the bricks off this dude.
But that's the thing, Tank doesn't come across as at this point of his career.
Mm-hmm.
To caring what people think or what the general public thinks about him if he thinks, oh, if he knows I got the W, I'm not going to fight that guy. It's not economically advantageous to me to fight that guy again.
It's interesting, man. Thanks, very interesting dude, man.
But congratulations to him. I don't want to.
Oh man, I don't think we are. I don't think nobody hating on Tank.
But yeah, he's definitely he's arrived as a star.
Yeah, one of the stars
of boxing.
To me, now he's truly arrived. I know he's been pop culture indoctrined as that dude, but to me, I just needed to see him fight against somebody for real. Like, I didn't care about Leo Santa Cruz. I knew that fight was already done because there wasn't nothing Leo Santa Cruz can do to scare Tank anyway. You know what I'm saying? In terms of his power, I ain't think he was going to do it. He can box, but he's not going to scare a Tank. I wasn't worried about Leo Santa Cruz. Isaac Cruz, I was surprised that he gave him some go. But everybody else, I was not. I mean, come on, man. Gamboa, she was there for a check.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give him. I wasn't giving any flowers for those fights. You know what I'm saying? But this one I was, because I do feel like there was a threat. There's a threat, regardless of, like you said, Will, I do agree. You know, losing weight does hurt. It hurts.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But it's still a threat. Like, it's a threat. It's a legit boxing threat of boxing a dude who has speed, power, and whatnot that can hurt you. And, you know, you won that fight. You know what I'm saying? In a high pressure situation in Vegas. All eyes on you. You know, packed crowd. Everybody's watching. And you put on a show. So, I can't knock you for that. You did your job.
Yep, he announced himself as one of the stars. Definitely. And we'll see. It'll be interesting to see where his career trajectory goes from here, from perspective of his level of competition in the ring that he seeks out.
Yeah, and I think Ray said Butch Beard was y'all coach in Morgan State, right? Butch Beard then.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Yeah, Todd Bozeman came 3 years.
After?
No, 2 years after I graduated. Gotcha. I graduated in 2004, so gotcha. I think Bozeman came to coach. Morgan State in 06.
That's what it was. Anyway, as part of our HBCU Corner segment, we'll play our interview with former Morgan State University men's basketball coach Taz Bozeman after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Safe.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Go ahead. That's what I'm
saying. On Ampire Media. That's AmpireMedia.com.
.com. Did you?
Yes, I did. So I packed it up and brought it back to the crib. Just a little something to show you how we live. Everybody want it, but it ain't that serious. Mm-hmm. That's that. So if you gon' do it just like this. Did you realize that you are a champion? You don't see just how wild the crowd is. You don't see just how fly my style is. I don't see why I need a stylist. When I shop so much, I can speak Italian. I don't know, I just want it better for my kids. And I ain't saying we was from the projects, but every time I want to lay away all deposit. My daddy say, when you see clothes, close your eyelids. We was sort of like Will Smith and his son. In the movie, I ain't talking about the rich ones. Cause every summer, he'd get some brand new hair, brain scheme to get rich from. And I don't know what he did for dope, but he'd send me back to school with a new wardrobe. And hey, hey. I think he did when he packed it up and brought it back to the crib. Just a little something to show you how we live. Everything I wanted, man, it seems so serious. Mm-hmm. That's that. So if you gon' do it just like this. Did you realize that you are a champion? When it feel like living's harder than dying. For me, giving up's way harder than trying. Lauryn Hill said her heart was in Zion. I wish her heart still was in rhyming. Kids gon' listen to, huh? I guess me if it isn't you. Last week I paid a visit to the institute. They got the dropout keeping kids in the school. I guess I clean up my act like Prince of Doo. If not for the pleasure, least for the principal. They got the CD, then got to see me drop gems like I dropped out of PE. They used to feel invisible. Now they know they invincible. Hey, hey, hey.
This is the story of a champion. Runners in the mark and they pop the gun. Stand up, here he comes. Tell me what it takes to be number one. Tell me what it takes to be number one. This is the story of a champion. Runners in the mark and they pop the gun. Stand up, here he comes. Tell me what it takes to be number one. Tell me what it takes to be number one. Did you realize?
Yes, I did. So I packed it up and brought it back.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene on Empire Media at empiremedia.com. And Wole and I are back. We are now bringing you HBCU Corner. It's been a minute. Thank you for following us at the MEAC tournament. We had a fun time, of course. Shout out to Howard University for winning the whole thing on the men's side, on the ladies' side, Norfolk State. But now we are back with a special guest, and he is none other than Coach Todd Bozeman of formerly University of California, as well as Morgan State University, currently a play-by-play analyst for HBCU Go Network. Coach Bozeman, what's happening, brother?
What's going on, fellas? How you guys doing?
Good. Glad to have you on.
Glad to be
Absolutely.
On. Glad to be on.
It's good to have you. And Wole, I'm already give this dude some flowers because he covered a UMES game earlier in the season. Of course, everybody knows that's our alma mater. And he covered, I think it was the GW game, Coach. Is that correct?
Yes, yes.
And Coach Bozeman called it. Well, he's going to be good this season. Of course, you know, they had the big upset over Temple. Just had a great season. One of the best seasons in our memory. So, Coach, you are now a family just for that reason alone.
Hey, well, thank you for that. I appreciate that.
All right, so Coach Bozeman, you were pretty young when you were at Cal, and I know you got some good memories when you were coaching over there. We'll ask you a few questions related to that. And then, of course, you went to Morgan State, as I mentioned. So give the people some insight. Who had the better homecoming?
Wow. Well, I mean, you're talking about of the HBCUs? Because I've been to quite a few. I hadn't been down to A&T's homecoming, but they really did. They don't do homecoming like that at the PWIs. They don't do homecomings like that. It's a little bit it's a little bit different. It's a little bit different. So I'm gonna say that. But yeah, Cal was a fun time. It was a point in my career that really has shaped and made an imprint on my career. We just had the 30th year anniversary of the team that beat Duke to go to the Sweet 16. So all the guys came back. I only had one assistant. A lot of people don't know that story, but I only had one assistant that year. So, and he's with the 76ers now. So he wasn't there. Jason wasn't there because he's playing, but they all did videos and sent them in. And then Jared Haas was with Stanford playing. So, but they put together a video. And the thing I thought that stood out that I didn't even realize it at the time, it was 30 years ago, and we were all in our 20s. The players, the coaches, everybody, we were in our 20s when we had that fantastic run. But after that, I coached some outstanding players that are doing some big things now in basketball all the way around. And it was a great time. But the Morgan State University will always be a part of my heart. 13 years there, and we did some great things there as well. And obviously going to postseason 3 years, NCAA tournament 2, winning it 3 years in a row, and beating Maryland, Arkansas, DePaul. I mean, we had some great wins and some fun times, and I will always cherish those memories. So a lot of people, they treat me like I went to an HBCU. Unfortunately, I didn't. I went to University of Rhode Island. I'm a Rhode Island grad, but I feel like I went to an HBCU because I've experienced all of it. So there's not a piece that I didn't experience. And the homecomings were off the hook. We were at other schools. We actually played UMES for their homecoming 1 year, I think, because you guys do it in basketball and not with football. So it's always homecoming is always a great time.
Absolutely. You answered that just like a coach, man. You know, I'm glad you did, though. You're showing love to Cal and Morgan State at the same time. But we already know who got the best homecomings, Wole. You mentioned J-Kid, and I know you get this question a lot. I've heard you talk about it. But for our listeners, just share what your experience was like coaching the young Jason Kidd and how you feel about all that he's achieved in his coaching career, NBA career.
Well, really proud of him. I mean, what else could it be? I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. Can't say that I saw Hall of Fame, but you could tell he was a great one. I don't know if anybody thinks of Hall of Fame, but they think of, hey, man, he's one of the best to ever play. Very, very proud of him for that. I spent the training camp down there this year in Dallas for training camp. And unfortunately, they're having a tough time right now. And a lot of that's because they can't really defend. So that was an issue before. And to me, adding Kyrie just made it worse. I mean, obviously, he's a good player, but he's not a defender. And you got to win. No matter how exciting the game is, you win on the defensive end. So UConn just showed that. I mean, I know we're going to talk about, but all championship teams, even in other sports. So that's what I say to that. But Jay was a savant coaching him, because he always thought the game. A lot of people don't know that he was always a guy that studied the game. So he would come in and get film, and he would watch film all the time. And I think that the film gave him an edge. And then he was just so competitive, probably one of the most competitive people I've ever been around. So it didn't matter what it was. He was trying to be first and trying to be the best at it. And just his defense, he would energize the guys just from his energy and what he brought to the table every day. And not just, he wasn't as big of a verbal leader as he was by example. So you almost had to get on board and follow the leader, because he played so hard all the time. So great career. Great career, Olympic gold medalist. And he is, I'm super proud of him.
Coach, you're good at this. I'm not going to lie. You mentioned UConn. That's the next question I had. You already talked about tournament. Look, I see you're good. You're real, real good. All right, speaking of excitement, UConn just won the national championship. What were your overall thoughts on college basketball this season?
Well, first of all, I think it was a great season, first and foremost. I think that the NIL and the transfer portal has changed the game completely. And it has created a situation where you can rebuild your team faster. A new coach taking over a new program can build it faster. It's not a situation where you're building super teams, but it is a situation where you can rebuild your roster and you can get quality guys, therefore creating more parity in basketball, because now you have guys that have already gone somewhere and said, you know what, I went for the whole, you know, the hoopla the first time. This time I'm going somewhere where I can play. I'm just as good as Ray Rogers from UMES. So I'm going to go over here to Howard and I'm going to beat him, because I was beating him every day in practice. So you're getting that type of thing. And I thought it was great that, you know, a lot of people talk about the ratings and that, and the fact that they didn't have the blue bloods. And I loved it the way that they had it, because everybody earned it. You got to earn it. You can't get there with your name. When we played Duke in the tournament that year that we spoke about earlier, that's the main thing our guys kept talking about. Like, hey, man, that ain't got nothing to do with us. They won those championships. That ain't had nothing to do with us. And that's kind of how guys think nowadays. So I thought it was great. I thought it was great for FAU to do what they did and come in and have. I thought Kansas State would have gotten there, because it almost seemed like it was destiny for them. But They built that program up. Tang, he does a tremendous job. I can't say that I thought he would do this fast, but I thought he would be successful just knowing him and spending time talking to him. But UConn was the best team. I mean, and what it showed is that you don't have – it's not where you start, it's where you finish. Because they did not start out – they weren't ranked in the top 20. Then when they got ranked, they had a period of time where they had a struggle adjustment, and then they worked it out. That's what it's about right there. That's what it's about. And so I thought they were the best team. I would have been surprised had San Diego State beat them in the championship, because they could go inside, they could go outside. I thought Jordan Hawkins was tremendous. I mean, it's like Ray Allen point two or 2.0. It was a great tournament. I thought it was great. I know that's a longer way answer, but
it's a good answer. It is a good answer. I have a follow up question to that. Then, who would you say coach or player, to be honest, would you rose their stock in the tournament?
Wow. Clearly, all the coaches that made it to the Final Four raised their stock. Obviously, Hurley raised his even more winning it. But I thought Jerome Tang raised his. I thought, and you see the result of it, guys winning. Amir Abdur-Rahim, who is Sharif's brother, Sharif Abdur-Rahim, who I coached at Cal. So I've been knowing Amir since he was 12. I was so proud of him. He may be even younger than that. But I was so proud of him. And he raised his stock. And then it got him another job to South Florida, which I'm happy for him. And that's great. You know, it was a time where you had to do it on a more consistent basis. But now it's a little bit different. And you've had quite a few coaches. You even saw that last year from the coach at Florida now was at San Francisco and the like. So I can name examples. But this year in particular, that stands out to me that guys rose their stock. Coach from Fairleigh Dickerson went in, and then boom. I mean, he just talked about the fact that he was a Division II coach playing in front of 100 to 200 people, and now he's coaching in front of millions. And then it produced a job for him at Iona. So it's those coaches stand out that they definitely created or raised their profile in coaching. But it's again, a tribute. All those schools benefited from having the ability to bring guys in from the transfer portal. Now it does affect high school kids in a negative way.
I know.
But it does allow a program to create a situation where they can build their program up a lot faster than they had in the past.
Yeah, that's the only issue is that the high school kids. I feel for them. I feel like it's totally different from how it used to be. Like now you can get an established player in college and helps your program, you know, grow faster.
Right. It does. I mean, high school is just, hey, you know, that's how it goes. That's the ecosystem. You know, it's always the ecosystem. And that's how it goes. You just gotta keep grinding. And basically what's happening is the high school guys are now going to schools and they're getting better. And then they're looking and either staying there or saying, hey, now I want to go to another school and have another situation. And as a coach, I mean, you're already getting a guy that's been coached. He's been pressed. He's been yelled at. He's got the discipline. He almost kind of now formulates and knows what he really wants now, or what he's really capable of doing, or if he really loves it or not. Because sometimes it just exposes you. You think, I used to always tell guys when I recruited them, I said, listen, if you don't really love this game, and then you probably shouldn't come play for me, because it's going to be like work to you. If I have to get on you to run in the morning or to go to a workout, then you have to be self-motivated. I'm not supposed to coach effort and focus. I'm supposed to coach skills and teach you the game and teach you how to be more effective with what you have. So I used to tell guys that all the time, but I think some players, and I used to say this, I used to tell my assistant coaches, I said, yeah, he looks more like a fan than he really loves the game. Because if you're a fan, that's okay. But as a fan, I can't have guys, I don't want to coach the guys that are just fans. I don't want that. Because you're just a fan of the game. If you love the game and you want to be a part of it, that's a little bit different. So that, to me, it stands out a lot, because those guys just, you know, you're not embracing the grind and what's involved in being as good as you could possibly be.
I like that thought process. I never thought about it that way. You're a fan of basketball, but you don't got the desire. It's totally different. You're right. I've never thought about it that way.
Yeah, a lot of guys sitting on the bench are the fans. Got great seats.
Very true. Very true. All right.
Wow.
Coach, I mentioned this. Like, you're from D.C., so I have a hard question for you, like a real hard question.
Wakanda forever.
All right, man. Here we go. Are you a Commanders fan or a Cowboys fan? Because you know that's how it is in this area.
I don't root for no NFL teams.
Oh, okay.
I stopped that. I stopped that when the Kaepernick situation happened.
I got you.
Okay. So That's a whole nother show there. So
yeah, as soon as you said that, I already knew.
Yeah. I don't waste no time or energy on none of that. Now, I enjoy watching good games and I root for players.
Gotcha.
So I want to see the players do well, you know, all power to them. That I think is great. And I think they should use their voice. But yeah, I'm all for that. Chase Young used to go to my camps. I know his mother, father really well. So I've been knowing Chase since he was a little guy. And you just mentioned the Commanders and the Cowboys. Now, when I did root for a team, it definitely was not the team down in Texas. It wasn't that team. That's for sure. But I appreciate Dak's leadership. I appreciate the things that he's been through. I just appreciate players and their journeys. So that's my thing. But I am a Washingtonian. There's no question about that.
I love it. Yeah,
Volley. See, he missed our DMV basketball special. So that's what we're going to bring him back for when we talk about DC basketball. Like it was dope. So we're gonna definitely do part two.
Okay, that's a bet.
All right, so coach. We're getting down to the real question. So, coach, after having success at Cal and being an NBA scout, what made you choose Morgan State as the coach as your next coaching job?
You want the real answer?
I want the real answer. So we want it real over here.
that was the opportunity I had. So I had sat out of college basketball for what amounted to 10 years. They gave me an 8-year sanction, and it didn't start until the year after I left. So it ended up the year I got in a year, got back in a year afterwards. So I was nipping at the bud. I wanted to get back in. I wanted to share. I felt they were kind of dismissing the success that we had had at Cal. And it was almost like, you know, that line with Jay and Jay-Z's song where he says, you said you made whole. Okay, then make another one. So my thing was, I'm gonna come back and I'm gonna do it again. And that was my driving force to get back. So you know, they didn't pay me very much money when I first took the job. They could have paid me two packs of Twizzlers and some M&Ms, and I would have took it. But I just wanted, I needed the platform in the venue. And I remember a lot of my coaching friends saying, even though they didn't give me a job, they were saying, Bowles, you know, that's a dead end. And I was like, man, listen, I'm going in to coach and I'm going to get this thing done. And when I got in there and it was the goal was to build it, and that we did. So I'm proud of what we were able to do there. But I'd be sitting here telling you, I interviewed at Hampton and I interviewed at Morgan and I got the Morgan job, and it didn't matter to me which one it was going to be. They did not offer me the Hampton job, but they did offer me the Morgan job. And so I took it right away, and the rest is history.
Coach, I'm glad that you mentioned that somebody said to you it was a dead end job, because that's part of my issue is the perception of HBCUs when people don't know the history of HBCU basketball. We just lost Willis Reed. And when I think Willis Reed, man, I think about Earl DePearl and John McClendon, those big names, Earl Lloyd. HBCU basketball has such rich, you know what I'm saying, history. It's real. And it's sad that the perception has been what it's been, although we're getting better. We're going to get there too. But now that you are part of HBCU Go, how do we get back to that place where the best players potentially choose an HBCU and the game just continues to evolve to where we regularly produce pros at HBCU?
Well, let me say this right now. Now, some of the perception of the HBCU athletics is warranted, because what happens is there's the small thinking. I remember when I did an interview with I can't remember the outlet, but I did an interview and they asked me, they said, well, what's the difference between being at like Cal and being at Morgan State? And he said, and I said, it's like big business. And he said, and small business. I said, no, big business, Corporation and Mom and Pop. I said, it's that far. I said, because it's the thinking. It's the thinking. It's the you have to think outside the box. And unfortunately, I think it's great that people can get their start at HBCU, but I think that you should, no matter what field it is, you should be able to either network outside of it or go work outside of it and come back. Because what happens is they only know what they know. So I can't tell you how many times they say, oh, that's not how we do it here. You go, what? I mean, look at the results that what you've been doing have been getting you. So let's not get into, you know, this is the way we've done it. And you have to be open to other ideas and other areas. And oftentimes that's where a lot of times when you see growth in a program, you'll hear people say, man, that coach was tough to deal with. Well, if he's fighting for his program, that's why you're gonna refer to him as tough, because he's trying to get you to think different. He's fighting for his program. He's trying to build. He's trying to get you to see a different vision, which is the same thing you do when you battle your kids. I don't know if you guys have children, but when you're raising your children, you're trying to get them to see something that they don't see. I mean, it's a lot of similarities to it, but that's one of the biggest differences in the levels. And people don't give back as much in HBCU. A lot of times the people that are giving back, the alumni that are giving back, are the older alumni. So they have more pride in it. But in defense of some of the younger ones, they go through and you have such a hard time dealing with the financial aid office. You know, you got papers sitting on the desk. Ms. Johnson don't want you to go and touch it. You're like, Ms. Johnson's right there on the desk. Yeah, but Ms. Johnson, I got to get to it and I got other things to do. And I'm getting ready to go to lunch and then I'm going on vacation. And when I actually go on vacation, nobody can go in there and touch that paper. And it's just sitting there. And even though the assistant, you know what I'm saying? I mean, if you went to HBCU, you know that story. So sometimes they leave a bad taste in their mouths. And they don't have the same experience. I think older alumni have a different appreciation for it because it probably was purer, and it was you know, they just had a better experience. And I'm not saying you can't have a great one, because my son is an HBCU grad, and he loved it. Not loved the experience, but he loves his school. So he has some tough experiences there, but he has an appreciation for it. So again, that's what I would say would be one of the differences in the two. But you can do it, though. You can do it. I just don't know if they'll ever be able to raise the money NIL-wise to compete with the top programs around the country. So it might be a situation where you better be comfortable where you are, because you're not gonna get it, and you're not gonna be able to get invited to the next level.
But coach, is there like it's some innovative way that they can go about doing it?
So you want me to get an answer for free? That's
I'm trying. Hey.
That's what you want me to do
for
that.
Just a little bit.
Because I'm telling you, coach, these HBCU streets are divided, man. Coach Prime has said similar things to what you said, and I know some people got some strong emotions about it. And I'm like, I can't wait to hear what folks are going to say. Well, you already know some of the people I'm talking about. It's going to be fun. But you're not saying anything that is incorrect, because things need to evolve. We just feel like the progression has been taking place, and I feel like we're heading in the right direction. So we're trying to keep the ball rolling, coach. We ain't trying to get you to give away no free secrets, right, or anything like that.
They definitely headed in the right direction, but you got to you like I said, you just got to be open to other ideas. You got to be open to being different and not just following what everybody else does. You know what I mean? You can't. Sometimes, you know, we get the message later, and we're just now starting to follow that path. Well, you know, now that path is old. You gotta kind of jump ahead and fast forward ahead. You know, when Coach Prime was saying what he was saying about Jackson State, or before he went there, and once he got there, I already knew. I lived that movie already. He has a bigger platform for which to sell it, and social media is bigger now. But I went through that whole thing. I knew exactly what he was talking about. Even when he was talking to Code, I knew what he was talking about. And even when Ed Reed had the Bethune situation, I felt him as well. I didn't have gone about it that particular way, but I felt him as well. So a lot of that is organic. I mean, it is what it is. And that's where a lot of the change has to happen. It has to start there, and it has to start in the communities. They can put together NIL Collective. You got people that could do that. You got, okay. I mean, think about Howard's. Now Howard has a brand. Yes. So Howard is selling something a little bit different. You know, it's a brand. It's like it's like, to me, like the difference between Maryland and Georgetown. Georgetown is a brand.
Yes.
You know, it's Maryland is a great situation, great opportunity, but Georgetown is a brand. Where Howard and the HBCUs is a brand. So you are selling not just the NIL, but the whole experience of being in the nation's capital and the access you have. I mean, your the vice president of the country is a grad, comes into the locker room. I mean, you know, like that's a different type of deal. You know, the swim team has the unbelievable, off the chart experience going to the swim meet. I mean, that kind of thing is a little bit different. So I just think that you just have to have a group of alumnus that come together, and they have to be conscious about it. It has to be intentional about providing those opportunities for the student athletes. And that, I mean, it's no simpler than that.
Mm. That's a whole nother show, Wole, right?
I know, right? It really is. It really is.
It's all good.
One thing I was going to ask you real quick, because you mentioned Howard and being a brand. And I've always had this discussion. Me and Ray had this discussion before, but, you know, Howard had a good showing to me. When they played Kansas, they had a good showing. Kansas is just far high, like just more athletic. But just mm-hmm. let's just say if Howard, being that brand, was able to get to the Sweet 16, right? Would that uplift the whole HBCU community in terms of basketball? Do you think that, because they're a brand and they're an HBCU school?
I think that definitely, for sure. Like, okay. Like when Norfolk State won a game, and this was before the first four, but Norfolk State won a game,
mm-hmm.
Missouri.
Yeah, I remember that game, yeah.
When they beat Missouri, when Coppin beat, I think it was Iowa State.
Yes.
Yep. No, it was Hampton. Hampton beat Iowa State.
Hampton beat.
Yeah.
Coppin beat.
Cincinnati, Coppin. Was it Cincinnati they beat?
I can't remember who they beat, but I was just giving examples of HBCUs that have won games in the tournament. So what you see is you even see it when there's a black coach, the community kind of comes together and starts kind of rooting for that particular school. So if an HBCU did do that, absolutely. I think it would be monumental, and you would see a tremendous influx with that particular school. But I think in order for the HBCUs to come all the way up, they have to change their thought patterns with the resources and how they travel, how you present things, everything. I mean, it has to be kind of overall uplifting. And I think that if they do that, then you're talking about a situation where you can create a viable option for student athletes.
You know what? You just mentioned Howard, and you've covered enough games. HBCU coached, obviously, at Morgan, and you've seen many players over the years. Currently, Robert Covington, as we know, is the only HBCU graduate that is in the NBA. Of course, from Tennessee State. And based on what you've seen lately, can you shout out any players that you think are close to that level? I think Shai Odom from Howard had the opportunity over the next several years, if he continues to develop and stay healthy, that he could be one of those guys that plays in the NBA eventually. What about you? Have you seen anybody that you feel like their game is at that level at this point?
Well, I can't say I've necessarily seen anybody that I feel like that's at that level right now. But I will say this, that the challenge that you have is they'll start out at HBCU because there's been plenty of them that have now, because of the portal, they transferred. So I know that I had two players, Taiwan Kenley and Phil Carr, the last two guys that I had that were high-level players. Both of those guys, there's no question if that portal was available. Not saying because they didn't like it at Morgan, but because they would have felt like they could play at a higher level. They wanted to experience it because I was getting calls that they were going to transfer. So wow. I can tell you from ACC to Big East to the Big Ten, a lot of those guys called me and said, "Bose, you know, we hear that, you know, this kid's going to transfer." And I was like, "Nah, they're not transferring." But I will say that if the portal was there, those guys, I would have bet that they probably would have left and wanted to experience something a little different.
And that's crazy because Taiwan, I cover him when he played for the Go-Go, you know, the G League squad. He still made it, I mean, to the pro level and was really good. I think a lot of people didn't know who he was. I remember when that new arena opened up, Entertainment Sports. I remember people coming out to see just him because, of course, he played at Morgan. So right. I'm wondering, just based on what you said, if that would have created opportunity for him to potentially play at, you know, that higher level, of course, the NBA. But it's still, I think, an accomplishment for him. So HBCU still got the odds stacked against them, of course. But back when you were coaching Morgan, of course, you had some good runs, NCAA tournament. You played against a young Blake Griffin and upset Maryland at Maryland. How'd you do it back then before all this? And, yeah, you've been covering games this year. Are we seeing more upsets this year, including my alma mater? I'm gonna keep talking about it. We also saw Grambling.
It's always good to get one. It's always good to have one.
And you talked about parity too. So we getting closer, right? Parity's coming.
No question. I will say this, that if we had come along during the Black Lives Matter movement, it probably would have been even better. I mean, we had significant teams, but again, we had older teams. My teams were older. So, you know, you got to remember I had one of the first six-year players because he got a waiver after he had already redshirted from an injury. I had one of the first grad transfers in Bubakar Coley. And then I had some junior college guys. So we were older. Reggie Holmes, who is now the all-time leading scorer, he did not even start until his junior year. So I had older guys. Now, he still is the leading scorer because he came off the bench and could really score. But I had older, tough guys. I mean, them guys, Itchy and Jarrell Green and Marquise Catley. And, I mean, those guys were grown men. I mean, I could have ran a daycare because most of the guys had kids. So, it was a little bit different. But it's very similar to what they are doing now. The teams are older with the portal and with the COVID year. So, you know, people forget a lot of the players, well, all the athletes got another year. So whereas a person would have been a fifth-year senior, they're in a sixth-year senior. So that COVID gave everybody another year. I just think that it's to answer your question, it was that's how we built it, and it was a grind. And I had some tough guys that had chips on their shoulders. They had been recruited by some other schools, and they had a point to prove. So we all kind of had a point to prove, and mine was to take another university, another program to the NCAA tournament multiple times, not just once, but multiple times. And that was my goal. And I had the right mix of guys, and I had the right mix of staff. So that's what afforded us that opportunity to do that.
Well, Coach, I love your intensity. We ran out of time, but we got to have you back on. I remember I used to watch you on the bench. Sometimes you would just be sitting back, arm around the chair, looking like you were like you knew your team was going to win. Like you had that confidence. Now you bring just this intensity. You're on the sideline calling games now. Are you enjoying this? I guess this new journey for you. You got Charlie Neal next to you. He said he's trying to teach you some things. We saw him at the MEACs. So, what's next for you?
Well, let me say this. First of all, what you saw on the sideline was me holding it in, like trying to keep my composure to think about what I needed to do next. In practice, this is what you saw. Like practice was probably where I was the most intense, even though some of my players would argue with you that they didn't see what you saw on the sideline. and a lot of times I was trying to coach my teams to prepare themselves. Like I wanted them to learn how to react to situations. I was thinking of, you know, postseason. I was thinking of towards the end of the year. I wanted them to be able to go through some experiences and work it out and work those things out. And that would help their IQ. It would help their chemistry and it would give them more confidence that they would be able to, they would have gone through some experiences. So that's what that, a lot of times that's probably what you saw. So yeah, that's, you know, just to put that out there, but I appreciate you guys having me on. Mm-hmm. It was great, man. And I would definitely welcome another opportunity to come on your show and spend time with you guys talking about HBCU basketball and basketball as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So thanks again for your time, Coach. And yeah, we'll be calling. Hopefully I'll see you on the sideline. We're going to talk further about what you said earlier. Like I said, it's gonna be an interesting discussion going forward.
Well, you know, I did games before I went to Morgan. So this is kind of my second time around.
Oh, okay.
You had to get used to it again. But I had done games before and worked with Charlie in the past. Mm. But so it's good to be back on the sideline. And now you have even more outlets. So it's a good thing. Looking forward to it though.
Well, congrats. And yeah, looking forward to having you on next time. Again, thanks for your time, brother.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. That's Coach Todd Bozeman, guys. Continue to check us out, HBCU Corner. We're back. It's just the beginning, fam.